I didn't do it. Okay. Now it's working. How did that go with everybody? Everybody ready? We got the questions from you guys early on, and we're going to spend about 10 minutes talking about some of the questions that came out of the small groups. So I want to first, a lot of them were for Premal about Kiva, and one of the interesting ones was how do we measure the impact of the loans in terms of impact on quality of life?
That's a really great question. I think, how do you know you're doing good unless you measure it? And one of the really interesting things I think about the internet is the transparency that enables. So when you go to the Kiva website, not only do you lend $25 and you have the potential to get it back, which is information in and of itself, because if you don't get the money back, clearly that entrepreneur didn't earn enough off that sewing machine that they intended to buy, for example, to pay you back. So there's information in just getting money back. But there's also, you get updates, and they're literally like blog updates on that entrepreneur. And over time, instead of it just being qualitative updates on how the business is progressing and how their family, how the nutritional kind of level, well, how things are improving in the home, we'd love to provide quantitative updates. So, for example, one of the things that is happening in microfinance now is creating poverty scorecards that are culturally specific. So in India, you can ask someone, do you own a pressure cooker? Yes, no. But in Honduras, that question might not be appropriate. And based on kind of several, 5 to 10 questions, do you own a pressure cooker? What is the floor of your home made out of? Do you have a tin roof? Yes, no. Essentially, you can start basically creating a poverty scorecard and then understand the likelihood that this person is in poverty and at what level. And then at the end of the loan, you ask the same questions again. Do you own a pressure cooker? Yes, no. Or do you have a tin roof? Yes, no. And if that changes, you can actually track the progress out of poverty in a more quantitative way. And this is something that we hope to layer into Kiva software so that when you get an update on your $25 loan, you can actually see your entrepreneur's progress out of poverty.
And while we're talking about it, can you explain the Kiva fellowships and sort of how
Sure.
young people can get directly involved?
One question is, how do you get all of this information from the 42 developing countries? I mean, we're in rural Senegal, we're in Iraq and Afghanistan right now. I mean, we're in pretty far-reaching places. And we've had now over 80 Kiva fellows. And what they are is it's mainly undergrads and folks who just graduated from college who go out for a minimum of 10 weeks, about 3 months, to one of our local microfinance partners in the developing world. And they basically hop on the back of the motorbike with the loan officer and take photos and actually document the impact or the lack of impact of these loans and chronicle the lives. And then they come back at night after kind of visiting 5 or 6 entrepreneurs in the field, and they post those stories from an internet cafe onto the internet so that the people making loans can actually get progress updates on the business. So this program, of which Tufts University has sent 2 folks, is something that is available to anyone here if you're interested in applying the Kiva Fellows Program. The information's on the site.
Larry, there was a question that seems like you could answer it. What can universities do to build entrepreneurial spirit at the community level?
First, I would say that they would – is this working? Can you hear me? Okay. Universities need to model entrepreneurial spirit on their own. So the institutions themselves have to be able to act entrepreneurially. But also I would say that not everybody needs to be an entrepreneur. I worry sometimes that we communicate messages at meetings like this, candidly, that everybody's got to go out and start something new. That's really not true. In some ways, you can make a far greater contribution to the world by getting involved in an organization which is struggling and making it work than you can by just having a great idea which is then going to die after you leave it alone. And so, Jackie's a good example. Jackie's a good example of taking an idea which, wasn't really hers alone and making it work and then embedding it in the fabric of Miami University. And we need more people who are willing to do that. It's, you know, it's not about just having the idea yourself and standing up and taking credit for, because you started something. I like to say the world is divided into two kinds of people. There are those who do things and those who try and take the credit. It's actually a lot easier to be a member of the first group because there's a lot less competition.
Well, Jackie, you're going to be graduating in December, and Larry talks a lot about creating sort of a, you know, a sense of engaged citizenship throughout one's life and sort of starting that at the university level as an undergrad. You're going to graduate, and Premal is a good example of somebody who left probably a very lucrative job at eBay to start Kiva in the Mission District of San Francisco. And I wonder what your plans are for the future and sort of how you're going to create this balance between, I don't know if you have student loans, but you know, certainly sort of making a living and also continuing this sort of work.
This isn't working. Oh, maybe it is. Is it? No. Okay. Now I'm off track. Okay. Well, like David said, I started when I was 19, and I'm a full-time student, and I'm graduating early in December. And my commitment to social responsibility will definitely carry over after I graduate. I don't have concrete plans yet. I have a few offers on the table, but I haven't necessarily chosen one. Miami University has expressed maybe some interest in me carrying on with Eden. I also interned in Dublin with Eden last summer. So it's definitely opened a lot of doors. It's definitely opened my eyes. I think a lot of students do go after the lucrative jobs when they graduate to say, you know, when I graduated, I got this sweet job. But to me, a sweet job would be one that I am making a social change and social impact. So I will definitely be looking for those kind of opportunities. But, I mean, I think really something that you can do at your school, like Larry said, is, I mean, Eden Live on Campus is a great example. You can start it at your school. You might not have thought of the idea yourself, but you thought of it for your school, and you could do that. If you're in a sorority, fraternity, organization, anything, you can order T-shirts from us. You can make a social change merely by ordering T-shirts. So I think just thinking of examples like that in your own life and daily activities to make a change is something that everybody here can do.
There's a great question here, Premal, that is there any opportunity for domestic entrepreneurs to get involved with Kiva, domestic rural communities, etc.?
That's something that we intend to launch this year. We didn't know how to get started because we thought there's some laws in the U.S. we might be violating if we let people lend to folks in the U.S. And we're pretty naive. It's only 3 years old, and we're not lawyers. And we operated under a lot of fear of regulators because, you know, is it legal to let someone in Des Moines, Iowa lend to someone in Uganda? We don't know, so we just tried, and you know, I'm the oldest person in the company right now, so it gives you a sense of.
And you're 24.
Yeah. I'm 32, you know, I think that we think you know, if it's not legal, it should be legal. So we're gonna just try it. And be looking for that on the sign. If you want to help out with that, we could use some help as well.
Easier to ask for forgiveness than permission.
That's right.
That's a great line. I like that.
Not original.
And another question for you, Premal. How do we sustain the effort and provide guidance and support to entrepreneurs? I guess in terms of sort of advice and sort of, mentorship for these entrepreneurs.
So I'm sure everyone here has heard the quote, you know, give a man a fish, he eats for a day, teach a man to fish, he eats for a lifetime. I think in microcredit, the power of these small loans is that the working poor around the world, they already know how to fish. They have their own ideas, and they know oftentimes what it takes to become successful. What they lack is access to capital, credit, to buy a boat and a net. And so I think that really instead of the typical supplicant benefactor relationship, you know, I know you don't know what this is a relationship where you're a business partner with someone else through your $25 loan based on mutual dignity, and you're enabling them with their own idea and their own creativity to kind of figure out the best way to provide for their family as a business partner.
We have to. What are we doing now?
So now, the result of the homework. We have these themes and gems that you guys in your conversations came up, and I'm going to share them with our panelists. And just from here, the panelists will then, you know, give us their thoughts. But a couple of these ideas that came up from you: develop a system to share promising practices, make universities socially responsible, and ways that we could do that include make mandatory service learning part of the core curriculum, create socially responsible endowment funds, make universities fair traders, develop career centers that focus on public service careers and leadership, get students off campus and into communities. Sounds like a directive more than anything. Work with local community through microfinance projects and collaborate between the local government and university. Other ideas were about leveraging the media, particularly the video and internet, to connect students and gain broad-based support. And finally, maybe defining poverty itself and target activities to focus on a common definition. And then the last part of this is some gems, which are ideas that maybe just one person came up with, but we really liked. Provide tuition credit for internships addressing social community issues. Adapt sister city programs for use with universities, connecting U.S. universities with universities in impoverished communities. I like this. This is my favorite one. Have students live on less than $1 a day to sensitize them to what poverty means. The caffeine withdrawal, I can't imagine. and then business schools developing incubators for student projects. And back to you, Dave.
We're wrapping up the panel part, is that right?
You have 10 minutes now.
Oh, we have 10 minutes. Yeah. All right, that's what I keep. Well, this is, I just want to open it up to you guys. You know, Larry, what do you think about a mandatory sort of service requirement for a college?
This may come as a surprise to you, but I'm against it. I'm against it for a couple of reasons. One is that if you make it a mandatory requirement, then it becomes like any other requirement, your language requirement, your math requirement, and students sort of check the box. I think our responsibility as universities is to educate students to be active, engaged, effective citizens, to develop habits of engagement that will live with them for the rest of their lives. I don't think you do that by just saying, you know, here's a requirement, go fill it. Because that's what will happen. Students will fill it and it'll be gone. So I would much prefer to see us try to educate students to understand that this is, A, their responsibility. B, it's important. It's important for the world. I've yet to meet a person in my 56 years who thinks the world is perfect. Not one. If you don't think the world is perfect, the only way it's going to get better is if you work to repair it. And so I think everybody's got to understand that. And it's not a career choice. I think it's great if many of you decide that you're going to go out and do what Premal has done and devote your lives to this. Most of you won't, and most people won't. I think there's still a role, though, for folks who are going to be doctors and lawyers and teachers and engineers and whatever to still become engaged to make the world a better place. And that's what we ought to be doing as universities, is trying to educate students to do that and to instill that sense of responsibility in them. I don't think we do it by just saying, here's another requirement that we're going to squeeze in that you have to fulfill before commencement.
Another question that's a great point. How do you make universities fair traders? And what has Tufts done?
Actually, we've been part of establishing a fair trade coffee collaborative in Uganda that one of our faculty members has been involved in. And we've got a commitment to buy local food and to to be green in all of our business practices. I'm very proud of the fact that the Sierra Club put us on a list of the 10 most sustainable campuses in the United States. So we've tried to model this kind of behavior in the way in which we conduct our own activities. I think, though, that that one of the comments that came up was, what should universities do to be socially responsible in their investment practices? This is a much trickier issue. We have invested, as we have in microfinance, to do two things. One is to try and do well by doing good, but what's important is to do well. I point out to people that we are a charitable organization. People give us money to do good, but not that we go and then invest in other charitable activities. That's we're not a foundation. And so we should be trying to invest in ways to generate the resources to support our core mission. The challenge on the socially responsible part is that everybody has a different idea of what socially responsible investment means. And where we should invest and how we should do it, it gets very complicated. This could be a subject for an entire session unto itself.
This gem, business schools can develop incubators for student projects. Premal, you're coming from the business world, and you're probably around a lot of sort of hard-driving sort of MBA graduates, things like that. How do you get those people interested in doing things to move from that sector into yours and use that really high-powered expertise? You know, I think that so many nonprofits, especially the ones that I know and work with, a lot of times we're missing that sort of MBA mentality that can make things work.
You know, I think that for me, when in college I learned about microfinance, and I was an economics major, and the microfinance part of it pulled me through the econ degree because I wasn't as passionate, or I didn't come alive when I was studying kind of microeconomics, but certainly microfinance was so cool to me. And then I went into the corporate world, just that kind of that mentality that I had, and I had this pit in my stomach for years, and I would imagine that there are a lot of folks in the business world who have that kind of pit in their stomach about wanting to do something, and it can be off the side of your desk. You don't have to quit your job, but that's what I'm finding is that people are just beginning to really listen to that, and they're seeing other people doing it. And you know that you can, life is long. You can take a couple years off and you can try something. You can try teaching. You can try something else and you can have several careers. And not being so driven by fear or needing permission to do things, essentially, I think is something that's increasingly happening and people are listening to that pit in their stomach and breaking out a lot more.
Jackie, you need to find a successor at Miami of Ohio. How do you find that person, that sort of, speaking of sort of that really driven sort of person that can pick up so that the movement that you started at Miami of Ohio doesn't die?
I do have a successor. We're working on her. And
what does that mean, you're working on her?
Well,
does she know yet?
No, she knows. She knows. It's hard to really know the ins and outs of the organization. It is a complicated business structure, and it changes every single day, as most entrepreneurial ventures do. I'm sure Kiva.org changes every day. I know we change every day. But finding commitment to social change at a university is surprisingly not that hard to do. Depends on what level of commitment. But I know that we had recruitment in January for the new team, the new Eli on campus team at Miami. We had about 75 people apply and show interest in being on the team, and unfortunately we could only hire 10. So I know it exists. I know it's there. We've only been around for a year and a half, and we still have that many people interested. And just to address this question of business schools can develop incubators for student projects, I know EanLive on Campus was developed out of our social for Center for Social Entrepreneurship. I'm sure you, at every one of your universities, you have something comparable. In our center, EanLive was the first initiative, but we're now working within the communities and within Cincinnati and other areas to really scale social impact and change in different, you know, anywhere from financing, you know, immigrants and things like that. We have programs like that, as well as, you know, expanding EanLive on to other campuses. So I think it is up to the students to push on the university to make them more socially responsible and to make them know that it is something that's important to you. And so when you go back to your schools, I urge you to start talking to people, to start formulating ideas and pushing back on the university to be more socially responsible.
I was going to ask you to sum up, but you sort of did. Premal, do you want to? We have maybe a minute and a half for you and Larry both to sort of sum up and talk about the gems and themes, if you wish.
Well, I mean, I'm psyched that so many folks are here in this room, and I, you know, it's, to me, I just don't think that that the folks who really want to do something and break out and you know, take a bit of a leap of faith on their career choice or on balancing, you know, their GPA with helping others. It's, you know, we're not alone anymore. I mean, it's a huge movement and it's coalescing. And I think things like social entrepreneurship and what campuses are encouraging, I mean, it makes me so, I mean, I don't think Kiva is a three-year-old organization and no marketing budget. When I quit my job at PayPal, no one was coming to the website. And the way the Petri dish in which Kiva started and the word got spread was college campuses. It basically spread through email listservs and Evites. And so, you know, I think all of us, especially connected by the internet, can actually do things in a short amount of time. Now, every 10 days, $1 million is being raised on the website from 10,000 people. You know, it's just the world can change very fast because we're all connected and we're all engaged. So I'm really psyched about that.
Since we're, I guess, talking at the end about careers and decisions and how you're going to spend your time, first of all, I want to congratulate all of you for investing the time to come here and be part of this. I'm very optimistic about the future when I see the kind of passion and vision and willingness to make a difference expressed by the young people of our colleges and universities. So congratulations to all of you. I think a career is only knowable in retrospect. You know, on the day you retire, you can look back and say, that was my career. Up until then, you're just making plans. You know, man plans and God laughs. So, you know, I would say to you, be prepared to recognize opportunity when it walks up and hits you in the face. You are going to find that you're going to learn skills in doing the kinds of things that Jackie has done. Yes, it may have detracted a little bit from her studies, but she has learned some amazingly useful life skills in, you know, trying to get people to pull together for a common purpose, you know, meeting a payroll, you know, living within a budget. So, you know, don't try and plan everything in advance on these sorts of things, but recognize that there are lots of opportunities to make a difference, lots of opportunities that you can't even imagine right now that are going to come across your desk. You may start out doing one thing, as Premal did, and wind up doing something completely different as he's doing now. That actually was the story of my career as well. I never imagined I'd be an academic, let alone a university president. So, you know, keep your eyes and your ears open, and the best opportunities are going to come from your classmates and the fellow folks that you're going to meet at places like this who've got great ideas, but they need other people who are going to be willing to put their shoulder to the wheel to actually make something happen. And, you know, I wish you the best of luck in doing that.
Jackie, I want to let's clap for everybody. And Jackie just wanted to. Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Let's clap now. You're going to have to clap again. Jackie wanted to emphasize that her GPA is just fine. She was like, "I'm doing okay." But I want to thank all three of our panelists, Larry, Premal, and Jackie. I think that you're an inspiration to everybody here, and I think the specificity of your programs and sort of the actual impact that's it's demonstrable is really, I think, especially inspiring. So I want to thank you all for being here. Let's give them another round of applause. We're going to do the commitments now. All right. Okay. As you know, integral to this conference is the actualness, I think, of the results, and part of that is the commitments. And so we're going to point out three extraordinary ones from the attendees, and hand you a certificate and take your picture and shake your hand. The first one we'd like to point out is Marisa Van Sonnen from Yale Law School. She can come up. All right. She's involved with the Community Development Financial Institutions Law Clinic at Yale University. That's a nice, tidy name. Her commitment is to respond to the U.S. mortgage crisis by providing residents of New Haven, Connecticut, facing home foreclosure with legal counsel and guidance. That's a phenomenal commitment, I think, especially given Yale's relationship with New Haven, which could always be improved, I think. I don't mean any, you know what I'm saying. Okay. Through her work at the Community Development Financial Institutions Law Clinic, Ms. Van Sonnen plans to help negotiate more favorable loan rates for residents facing foreclosure. She will contribute to the assistance team at the clinic counseling people who are facing foreclosure. She plans to work collaboratively with Yale Law and business students at the clinic. She aims to help the city of New Haven develop individual and systemic responses to the mortgage crisis. And she also plans to advocate for individuals, families, and communities facing the mortgage crisis. Let's give her a round of applause. Golf tournament pose. All right. The next commitment is Danica Berry from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. All right. She's involved with the UNC Duke Bennett Millennium Village Project, the United Nations Development Program, Columbia's University Earth Institute, and the Millennium Promise. Her commitment is to raise $1.5 million by June of 2008 in order to help the Millennium Village, Marenyo, Kenya, combat extreme poverty. This is the first student-led partnership with a Millennium Village. The Millennium Villages seek to end extreme poverty by working in villages throughout Africa in partnership with governments and other stakeholders and provide affordable and science-based solutions to help financially empower individuals. To date, the project has raised over $1 million and will continue their fundraising efforts by partnering with student groups and reaching out to the community at large. Starting this summer, students from three schools will participate in an internship program working with researchers from Columbia University's Earth Institute and Millennium Villages. The group is determined to ensure the longevity of this program. Currently, the group is leading an effort to develop a syllabus for a student-designed interdisciplinary course called Development in Practice, in which students will learn and formulate their own best principles for international development. UNC will offer this pilot course during the upcoming fall semester. Let's give a round of applause for Danica. Thank you. Congratulations. Okay. And finally, Agun Beta from American University in Kosovo. All right, let's give him a round of applause. I think you win the farthest traveling for this. His commitment is to provide seven non-Albanian ethnic minority student scholarships to the American University in Kosovo. Mr. Beta is creating this scholarship program not only to create multi-ethnic community at the university, but also to set an example for the country that a peaceful coexistence between all Kosovar communities is possible. Once the scholarship program is implemented, Mr. Beta will create activities such as traditional food meals where students will come together and share their common interests and cultural heritage peacefully. Mr. Beta is currently seeking funding to support the full scholarships of seven students from the university from public and private donors. Congratulations, Mr. Beta.
Well done.
Is that everything? I guess it's time for lunch now. Thank you so much for being here. I think it was an incredibly exciting session, and now you can eat lunch and enjoy the rest of the day. Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, the working session is now concluded.
Good job.
Your meetups.